And on the line, we've got Don Sutherland. G'day, Don. How are you?
I'm wondering how I top Kevin.
I know, I know.
My rather dry discussion sort of pales a bit, but I'll do my best.
You know, it's funny, before we start talking about the job summit and superannuation, I just have to tell you that I was riding along going down to Carlton, and I had to get off the bike and walk around some road workers, or I don't know what they were doing, but they put off the, we couldn't get down the footpath, and they were talking about, they were having a big chin wag about get a load of Morrison and his departments, and I thought, it's gone from five to six already.
Well, they would be in the know because they pay a lot more attention to what's going on in the world than many. And they also, despite labels to the contrary, do a lot of talking and thinking about how to get the job done better when they are working in their teams, and that which is something, a tablet which is usually lost on the engineers that that supervise them. And so that's a nice little story because it sort of segues into at least one or two of the things we're going to talk about in the next quarter of an hour, 20 minutes or so.
Yeah. So what's your take on this job summit, which is now being called the Accord Mark II or something?
Yes, well, it's definitely not the Accord Mark II. I don't know who's saying that, but that's not right. The first Accord was an agreement between the ACTU and a potential Labor government, and it later led to a thing called the National Economic Summit, which was Hawke's version of bringing everyone together and seeking common solutions. And that produced a statement, which wasn't a tripartite statement, that Hawke read out as a summary of that particular summit. And that was quite different to what went on with the what was the content of the accord. So the, whoever said that's wrong. What it does is lead us into, I think, some general comments that are necessary because of this thing. It is called the Jobs and Skills Summit, and it is, a la 1983, all about bringing people together and finding a solution in common. And there is a particular point to that out that we can work out from previous experience. And it is, this time it is intended to produce a white paper. And white papers in terms of parliamentary governance are very important documents. One of the most important ones in our history was the full employment white paper of the Chifley government immediately after the Second World War. However, this, to the extent that this will be one of the very first in which government does not actually write the thing, but it is apparently going to be a product of whatever consensus comes out. So we need to understand what sort of is going on in a more general sense. I've been lucky to be active in the union movement over, this is the fourth national summit of some importance since I've been active in the union movement. The first thing you can say about all of them, and this one included, is that they are thoroughly elitist. They may be tripartite, that is, pulling in people from government, parliament, from the employers, and from the union movement, and then plus others from social welfare, and I'm pretty certain from the banking industry this time, for reasons we'll come to. So firstly, they're very elitist, and whatever is going on there is going to produce something that is going to continue to be done to the working class, that is, the majority of the population. Not something that the, you know, the working class through their unions or other means, community activity and so on, can actually grab hold of and do for themselves. The second thing is that they're all Labor initiatives, these four 1983-1985's tax summit, the 2007 to 2009 tripartite process for the Fair Work Act was a different structure. They didn't use a summit, but they did use people who are elitist in the summiteer type realm to construct the Fair Work Act, which of course ended up being very different to what we had fought for in the Your Rights at Work campaign that actually got the Labor government elected, and then this one. So the second thing is to say about all of the first three is they dilute and weaken the commitments or the program that Labor makes to the people when they go to the election. So they go to the election. Now, on this particular occasion, this year, the Labor government went to the election with a very modest program, including on workers' rights and so on. Perhaps, arguably, the most advanced thinking was around skills formation, and some of the things it was trying to do for the workforce in aged care and in childcare, and arguably in nursing, although I think there are some complications there. So they dilute a program, in this case, that is already modest. And that's because, of course, by bringing the employers in, they have to do that, because the employers are not going to give up on some of the things they have now, like the basic architecture of the current Fair Work Act. So they're the first two major things about this summit, as much as there has been about the previous three.
Yeah, no, this is important. Key things for workers is the removal of the ability of employers to throw people onto the modern award just because they've created a non-negotiable EBA approach.
Yes. And to make sure, from the employer's point of view, the task is to make sure that industrial action rights do not flow from any proposed changes that might emerge that enable some sectors of workers who wish to go for multi-employer agreements.
Yeah, a patent bargaining.
Award-based changes, or whether they are some other form of multi-employer agreement. So you're right, that's right. That's the employer agenda, and from the point of view of the unions, is to reach some sort of arrangement, agreement for multi-employer bargaining. I haven't yet seen any union leader talk explicitly about the right to strike attached to that, nor make a solid connection to the award system.
Yeah, which are the two things that are most important to workers in general, because it's about righting the imbalance that's been written into the industrial relations at the moment.
Wage increases and the standard of living that flow from those to the rest of the working class will not change unless either one of two things happens, and maybe a combination. One is that the legal framework that prevents workers from making wage gains at low employment levels, the legal framework is changed so that there is industrial action rights that trump anything the employers might want that prevents them.
Yeah. And Stick Together Today, I found the Downer dispute really interesting because it's chiselling. It's an employer that is using these systems in order to chisel little bits of value out of the contract with their workers, rather than just be running a normal process of employment, which seems to be what employers think that they can get away with.
Yes, that sounds to me very much like the experience that the personal experience I've had coordinating enterprise bargaining in a national company for a national agreement, and which is on the record over countless disputes, including and escalating since 2007 and 2009. But those sort of stuff, that making concessions in the name of productivity, is where that was happening in the 90s, and So the employers are highly skilled at it now, and they have a team of lawyers and very knowledgeable non-lawyer industrial relations experts who provide advice on how to screw things out of workers in the enterprise bargaining process, and in, if necessary, shift them to out of the agreement but back onto the award or marginally above it.
Yeah, yeah. Let's get to the skills, because quite clearly that's the part that I reckon that the government and employers want to look good in. You know, like the government thinks that it can rectify the poorest state of skills development in Australia that's been caused by the LNP's government heavy reliance on visas, et cetera, et cetera, and undermining the, in my view, the training of Australians to work.
Yes, well, the in fact, it's been a terrible alliance, an entirely predictable one, but a terrible alliance between the employers and government since the mid-1990s to destroy the skills formation architecture in Australia, particularly targeting the publicly funded TAFE. And TAFE workers have been struggling against that under enormous difficulties for, I would say 25 years probably, being really the voice of sanity in all of that, because what the employers are now discovering is that their alliance primarily with LNP governments to destroy TAFE and the associated architecture around skills formation has now come back to bite them on the backside.
Surprise, surprise. What?
Yes, yeah.
Idiots. Yes.
And the Business Council of Australia have been up to their eyeballs in that. You're right. The primary mechanism, there are going to be two things going on. Some things, one aspect of it will be the reconstruction, if you like, of mechanisms for skills and training delivery that will be of some benefit for workers, and they are workers based in Australia already, but I don't think there's going to be, I'd love to be proven wrong. There are no signs yet. There's going to be a major breakthrough out of this summit for TAFE. We will see.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
The aspect of that is going to be migration.
Ah, yes.
You see, if wages are going to increase, the level of unemployment must stay low, and the legal framework that gives workers industrial action powers, or a new consciousness in the union movement to develop a strategy in defiance of the law when it comes to wages, workers' rights, conditions, and so on. That's what has to happen. Now, the idea is to open the floodgates on skills migration. And I think it's very interesting that on the 7:30 report last night, Sally McManus quite deftly handled that. She did that in two or three major points, actually. But on this one, she said, well, the union movement is going to be has developed and putting forward a proposal for a $91,000 minimum wage for a skilled migrant worker. And that is intended to prevent the opening up of the floodgates for migration to solve the skills shortage problem by employing migrants, including skilled migrants, on very low wage rates, and probably leaving the architecture for wage theft alive and well. Well,
oh, that's really fascinating.
From the point of view of the employers.
Yeah, yeah. They sound like gutter snipes, the employers, the things that they're they think is a reasonable approach to running the economy is fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, some research I've been doing myself, because I'm not really aware of any other economists, not that I'm an economist, I'm just someone who tries to think about these things. I'm a kitchen table economist to the extent I am, but some work I've been doing tells me that the rate of profit in Australia for the employers is shaky, and there is great variations from being very strong to being quite poor, depending on the industry and inside industries. But you put 100 employers in a room with the Reserve Bank governor as the guest speaker, and the first thing that they are thinking about all the way through is, what is going to be my improved rate of return out of what he is saying? That is, the profit I make relative to the investment I put in. And that's all they think about.
That's funny you should say that, because
that's shaky enough for them to be really worried, and that's why they're becoming very hyperactive now in the context of this summit, because they believe that this Labor government will give them things to solve that problem of the rate of profit.
Oh, that's interesting, because that's like the old story about a farmer. A farmer looks at a tree and thinks how many fence posts they can get out of it.
Yes, that's a good metaphor. Yeah. And the employers, of course, it's never been any different. I think the sort of
they're limited thinkers.
They're limited, but they're also, you know, they're not silly, and they do know what they're doing. And I think the greed thing is true, but it's not, in a sense. There's always going to be a problem with the rate of profit, because there are some things that actually go on almost beyond the control of the employers themselves, but just in the whole way in which the system works, to some employers, and as I said, the impact is different from one industry to another and inside industries and so on. But there is always a constant problem for them about how to maintain their rate of profit relative to competitors.
Yeah, so which is the problem of capitalism.
They can't control, so they have to go and do the things, the horrible things, from the point of view of workers, that they try to do. And, of course, mixed up in that, of course, is greed and so on. But
Yeah. Before we finish up, can I just ask you what you think is, if we look at it from a cynical promotional activity lens, what is this job summit supposed to perform for the government? What are they hoping for, do you think?
From the point of view of the government, firstly, it stops the focus from being on their appalling decision to maintain Morrison's Stage 3 tax cuts. It shifts the discussion from that. And yet the Stage 3 tax cuts and the continuation of that, even though it was an election commitment, so part of their mandate to leave it alone, we know now that the way in which all sorts of things are going on that make it utterly illogical for any Labor government, even a conservative one like this one, to continue with the Stage 3 tax cuts. But they're determined to do it. So the summit shifts things to be talking about jobs, skills, and so on. The second thing is to control the ACTU push for stronger workers' rights around collective bargaining that ought to include not just multi-employer bargaining, but ought to push towards industry and award-based bargaining with collective action rights. I mean, the simple thing to do would be to, and this is just a modest proposal really, would be to reverse the onus of proof. And that is, there is a natural right for workers to exercise industrial action in collective bargaining over any type of dispute.
Yeah.
And then legally, because we're living in capitalism, you enable employers to have a mechanism whereby they can, you know, well, I think the best type of mechanism would be, well, the employers can apply, that there'd be a ballot of the workers they employ to, as to whether there might be, whether the industrial action should, that they're going, they are using should be withdrawn. I mean, that's a sort of an out there thought, but it's sort of, you know, within the framework of the system we're in. So, but that's not going to happen. And so, the Labor government is dead set to control the push that unions and union members are trying to develop, although it may be in a stunted way that they're doing it. And then, of course, the problem then becomes that at some point, workers' consciousness will develop into acts of defiance against the Fair Work Act as we know it. And Labor needs to be able to, it knows it must manage it if it believes it's going to go into a second and third term of government.
Right.
The other quick point I make is that there's, in terms of, I think right-wing Labor in particular, those that come out of the Paul Keating tradition, are dead set keen to use the Jobs and Skills Summit to enable superannuation to become a major issue, and to enable some way in which the Labor government will cooperate with employer demands that four big banks, be able to get their hands more easily on the superannuation, $3.4 trillion in going upwards that there is at the moment. And there's all through the week in the Australian Financial Review, there has been...
Listen. Well, no, what I want you to do is, because we've got hardly any time, and I want to invite you to come back next week to talk about the superannuation, because this is really, really, really important.
It's really big, and it's being done. This is being done to workers and their savings in spades, and it reinforces my point about those two early remarks I made about the elitism and the dilution that goes on in these tripartite exercises. And it's a perfect example.
Great.
And if people do get access to the Australian Financial Review, the last week has been fascinating, including the way in which the government itself is pointing towards actually wanting this idea.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about this next week, okay? It's a date?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Don. Thanks for
talking
to us.
Best to everybody. Happy summer touring.